On today's program, my special guest is Tama Keeves. We're going to be talking about This Time I Dance, creating the work you love. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. Welcome to the program. Tama Keeves grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and graduated from Brooklyn College as an English major. She went on to graduate from Harvard Law School, cum laude, and joined one of Denver, Colorado's largest corporate law firms. There she practiced in the litigation department and earned a place on the partnership track. Well, one summer, as she sat on a California beach eating a cinnamon raisin bagel and watching silent waves crash the shore, she realized that the official track of success would not provide her with the riches of her own true path. She left the legal practice to write and to embolden others to live and breathe their most meaningful self-expression. Keeves is now a sought-after career coach and speaker. She's helped thousands of individuals worldwide to awaken to their inspired potential and live their creative dreams. Her best-selling book is This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love. She joins us today from beautiful Denver, Colorado.
Hey, Tama, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I am so excited that you've taken the time out of your busy schedule to join us. I have to say, over the years, I've had all the great best-selling authors, all the great spiritual teachers, a lot of authors of work purpose-type books. Your book, This Time I Dance, is one of the best I've ever read. And one of the reasons is this. There's only a few authors, and again, I think I've had most of them on this program, and they're all brilliant. There's only a few that I find that in their books, and even if it's how-to books, I find the way they write is almost poetic. Daphne Kingma is one. Certainly John O'Donohue is one. You are. The way you write is so inspiring. So right out of the block, and I don't think you're paying me anything for this. I really want to encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of this book. It's very well done. So thank you for the inspiration that's packaged in this.
Thank you for that inspiration.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's filled with a lot of stories, not just, you know, here's what I would inspire you to do or suggest you to do, but a lot of stories. We'll talk about a lot of them. And by the way, I want to start first by going into the back of the book and not what you talk about in your book, like we're all going to the back of the book to find out did she make it on Oprah. But I want to go back in one of the last few chapters when you said, "My day came when I wandered into Journey Books for a little Sunday afternoon diversion." And it's really as you were beginning to, I think, either think about writing this book, This Time I Dance, or maybe you were starting to, but there was a lot of insecurity with that. So here you are, a little diversion, you go into this bookstore, and then you see this section called Work Purpose, and I'm sure you're thinking, oh God, do I dare find out how many other books are already published?
Exactly. I mean, it was actually worse than that. I'd been writing this book. I'd been writing it, and I'd been, you know, following my inner voice, and I didn't have an agent, and I didn't have a contract or a publisher, and had been really, you know, believing in my dream and working up my courage to do this, and I'd been doing it for years. And then I walked into that bookstore, and there was a brand new book on exactly my topic, you know, and I just felt crushed. You know, you compare yourself to everybody else, and I kept thinking, oh, my God, who am I? I can't do this. I should give up. And one of the things that I always teach is that's what's going to happen on this journey. There's always going to be these choice points of do you listen to the fear inside you or do you listen to love?
Yeah.
You know, because the fear is going to tell you in quote-unquote, like, being practical, like, oh, you know, you're not famous, you're not going to make it, you don't have what it takes. And the love is going to say, but you're meant to do this, but you're gifted, but I'm calling you.
Absolutely.
So for me, it was that choice point.
Yeah, because you share early on in this journey when you left the law firm, and I want to share a little bit about that story as well, that if I was confident on Wednesday, I could be chewing my hair by Thursday. And that's so authentic, though. Thank you for writing that, because oftentimes a lot of our great teachers who I admire tend to pontificate a little bit, and we think they're just floating in the sky all the time, but you share your vulnerabilities and the fears that you've had to work through yourself.
Absolutely, because, you know, that for me, this whole journey has been that. I'll be inspired, on fire, believing, knowing, and down to my toes, this is what I'm meant to be. And then the next day, I'll be freaking out. I'll be terrified. Mm-hmm. And I think it is so important to share that part of the journey with people, because that is the journey. That is, I think, for every deep teacher, for every leader, for every visionary, for every agent of change on this planet, if you're not scared, then you're not really listening to your love, then you're not really going forward into new territory. So yeah, for me, that is the journey of which voice inside you will you listen to at all times.
Well, that's huge, because you had a lot of voices encouraging you. Tama, you're crazy leaving this law firm. You're a Harvard graduate law. What are you doing with your life? And you could have easily just stayed in that place. Tell about that story, though, where you were years ago when you were in this transition and how mm-hmm. you made that choice.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it kind of goes back to, I think so many people have this situation where you secretly knew what you wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I'd always known I wanted to write. I'd always had some inclination that way. But I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and to Orthodox Jewish family, and all I ever got was, you're going to write? You're going to write? You're going to starve. You're going to write. You know, so that was basically the go for your bliss talk
oh,
in my
yeah.
family.
Great accent, by the
yeah.
way. Thank you.
It's in the blood.
Yeah.
And so I did the practical choice, and I went to law school, and I got accepted to Harvard Law School and graduated with honors from Harvard Law School, and then was on partnership track in a major law firm. And I just felt so empty. I mean, I think a lot of people have this experience where you're doing, quote, all the right things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Something feels empty, and I kept feeling haunted, like, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something more. And thank God a friend of mine at the time knew that and had said to me something that became the basis of my book. He said, think about it. If you've been this successful doing work you don't love, what could you do with something you love? And for me, that became the question, like, I want to find out, you know? You get one life. I want to know what happens when you're doing something you love. And so that's what began this crazy journey. And it was that choice to say, I'm going to listen to the part of me that believes there is something else instead of the part of me that says, oh, my God, you're lucky to have gotten this far.
Yeah. So you left the law firm over there in Denver, Colorado. You stayed in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the mountains.
Yeah, my family thought, you know, she went to the mountains, never came back. That's the problem. She got into that Rocky Mountain High, and it never was the same again.
She's a granola Jewish princess.
Exactly.
Oy vey.
Jewish princess. Oh, I love that.
Yes.
I'm so stealing that now. Thank you.
But the other thing that you shared, I think, in such a vulnerable and honest way is when you started writing this book, there was a lot of doubts. And the other thing is, and I hear this a lot from other friends who are wanting to be published authors, you get a lot of counsel from people to do it the right way. It's mm-hmm. got to go the right way. And you chose to follow love. You chose to follow your heart.
Mm-hmm, constantly. And, you know, I think especially for any of us who are creative or wanting to do something different, that's immediately what everybody wants to do is figure out, okay, what's the system? You know, mm-hmm. what's the way? You know, and everybody told me you better join a writing group and, you know, like figure that out, you know, like learn from other people. And I'm not against learning from other people, but for me, the right way is the way of listening to your soul, your heart, your amazing spirit that has never been on this planet before. And, you know, so I went to this writing group, and it was always about critiquing, you know, figuring out what was wrong and how we could correct it. And plus, I'm a people pleaser by nature. So, mm-hmm. like, if they loved commas, I was going to give them 5,000 commas, you know. If they loved adverbs, next week it was adverbs, you know. And so I wasn't learning how to be me. I was learning how to be them. And I, you know, so I had to step away from things like that. The whole point of this journey of finding out what your bliss is, what your dream is, what your desire is really learning how to listen to what is sacredly you.
When we come back from break, I'm going to have you share the email that changed your life. For our listeners, I'm Richard Brendan. You're listening to Love is on the Air here on WICR. I'm having conversation with Tama Keeves about her book, This Time I Dance. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to the program. This is Richard Brendan. My guest today is Tama Keyes, and we're talking about her book, This Time I Dance. Tama is a life and career coach, workshop facilitator, teacher of Course in Miracles, written a beautiful book, the subtitle, Creating the Work You Love. Tama, talk about the story when you started to write this book. You started to work probably daily through the fears that was coming up. One day you scrawled in your journal, and by the way, you not only have great quotes in this book, but you also have a lot of entries from your journal over the years. You scrawled in your journal, just put it in the river, speaking about your book.
Well, basically, I was writing this book for years, you know, following it, because you always think, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to just go do this. And, you know, and of course, I had no idea how long it would take, and it ended up taking me like 12 years to work through this. And when I finally finished writing it, I kept thinking, okay, well, how do you get it in the world now? How do you publish it? How do you get it out there? Mm-hmm. And I read about commercial publishing and about self-publishing and all kinds of stuff, and in that journal entry, I just kept hearing this inner voice the whole time, just kept saying, just put it in the river. Just put it in the river. And at first I didn't know what the hell that meant, because Denver doesn't even have a river to speak of, if I want to be literal. But I knew it meant intuitively to put it out there in the stream of life somehow, some way, you know, self-publish it, get it into the world, and if it was meant to go somewhere, it would. And so I finally worked up the courage. I did it. I designed the book. I put my own money into this. This was terrifying. And then 4 months after I self-published, I got an email out of the blue that said, your fairy godmother has arrived. And it was an email from at first I thought it was spam, you know. I thought it was going to be, you know, like some marketing thing or, you know, the Russian girls are waiting for you, you know. You know, you think it's spam, right, you know. But I opened it up, and it was a marketing director of vice president of Random House. And she had been in a career transition and had somehow found my little self-published book and wrote to me and said, this is the best book I've ever read on finding your calling. I want to help you get it to a major New York house. And she did. She got it to the publisher I'd always, always dreamed of. It got picked up by Tarcher Penguin. It was amazing, and I love telling this story just because for me it is such a great example of everything I teach, which is that you can't plan an inspired life. You're not going to plan that. You're not going to figure that out. But if you listen to that voice that everybody has moment by moment, that's how these amazing things happen.
Yeah, you write in your book that your job, our job, is to follow your love again and again. And trust in something that we can't prove, but we know it in our gut.
Exactly. And what happens is these, quote, real world things happen to you later that, you know, I now, thank you, God, bank every check, you know, every bill is paid on this, you know. But initially, it really is that faith and that intuition. And you're going to have all the people against you that are saying, what are you, crazy? You know, and you know, you're going to trust intuition now. But if you don't, you die, you know, because I think each of us has that inside us.
Well, fear really chains our souls and keeps us from flying, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, and the reason this is so important to me, not only because of my own love and seeing my own talent fly, I love watching what happens to other people because other people are so much more talented and gifted and geniuses than they know. And they're sitting on this gold mine of talent, you know, this dynamite pile, and we're all saying no to ourselves. We're all, quote, being realistic or practical and denying this. So I want to see what our world becomes like when we start saying yes.
Well, and perhaps one of the reasons why we do that is because we're taught, even in our schools, especially in our school systems, to be so stinking practical. I love the title of one of your chapters. It says, it's more practical to be magical.
Amen. Hey, that is good.
Yeah. Preach it, girl. Talk a little bit about that. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you. I always love when I'm impressed with my own work. I'm so easily impressed. For me, that was a really life-changing thought, to really get in my bones because, you know, I come not only from the Jewish faith and from New York City, which, but you know, is grounded in cynicism. Plus, I'm a lawyer. I'm trained in looking for liabilities in the world and logic. You know, so for me to come up with a statement like it's more practical to be magical, you know, it was for me the grounding in realizing that your creativity, your intuition, your soul calling wasn't frivolous. It wasn't fluffy. It wasn't something that was fly by night. It was something that was stronger and more sound than any linear thought could get you to. And in my own life, that's what I found is that my drivenness or ambition or my logic only got me so far. And then I hit this level of pain that was, you know, almost unrecoverable from. But it was my love and my trust and my faith and my creativity that is infinite and that could take me all the way. So in this career, I'm never going to stop because I love it. It gives me energy.
Yeah.
So things that happen to you when you're in the presence of your love, where you draw the right people to you, you have infinite energy, you get hired even though you don't have the credentials, but you've got the love, you know, it's just, it is more magical, you know, and it ultimately is more practical because it has results.
And trusting that we live in a wise and compassionate universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that is really well said, and I have to say, if there's anything I had to do in this work, it was that. Mm. For me, everything came down to changing my view of reality.
Mm. My guest today is Tama Keeves. We're talking about her book, This Time I Dance. You're listening to Love is on the Air. I'm Richard Brendan here on WICR. We'll be right back after a short break. Guest today is Tama Keeves. We're talking about her book, This Time I Dance. Tama, I read an article that you wrote. It was published, I believe, in Pure Inspiration magazine in 2009. But the heading I liked, and perhaps this was taken from your book, but it said, and it also is, it's giving people permission not to be perfect, and it says, showing up is showing up. Do it unfaithfully, dare to be inconsistent, lopsided, and totally courageous. That's important, isn't it? Because I know what that's like, being somewhat a perfectionist. Sometimes it keeps us in the gate and we don't even get out.
Absolutely. And for everybody who's just made New Year's resolutions, this is a really good time. Because by now you've probably goofed already.
Yes, yes.
I had to keep learning that if you really want to stay on this path, there will be so many challenges or moments that you doubt yourself or moments that you set these goals for yourself and then you don't complete them. You know, I would set goals like, I'm going to write every day. I'm going to take it seriously. And then the next day I wouldn't write and I'd feel like a total failure. And that part of me would say, see, you can't do this. You might as well give up. You're not going to be anything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my own healing has been learning how to love myself so much and champion myself so much to say, that's okay. Let's choose again now. Doesn't matter what you did yesterday. Doesn't matter if it wasn't the way you thought. Let's choose now. Let's try again. Let's give the universe another chance to come through you. Mm. Let's give magic another chance to show itself. You know, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Rumi quote says, I love that one, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's something about come, come, once again come, lover of lever, wanderer, you know, you who have broken your vow a thousand times, come again, come again.
Yeah.
And it's that. I think it's the courage to say, I want to do this in my lifetime, and I want to do this in my lifetime. I want to get it right, and getting it right means getting it wrong initially. It means falling initially.
Boy, and it's all about loving ourselves, being kind to ourselves, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely, because that's the basis of everything. When you are loving to yourself or kind to yourself, that's when you can access a different intelligence, a different genius. Your creativity comes out when you're kind, when you're safe. It doesn't come out when you're critical, when you're harsh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's Abraham Maslow said that all creativity comes from safety.
Mm.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's a beautiful quote.
When I'm not quoting me, I like quoting other people.
And you're just as pleased with that, aren't you? Absolutely. Hey, Tama, with the clients that you've worked with over the years, the workshops that you've led, what are some of the major stumbling blocks for people in terms of keeping them from creating the life that they really want?
One of the ones I hear all the time is people will always say, but I don't know what I love. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, and I don't know what my life purpose is. And, you know, that comes up a lot. And one of the things that I always say to people when that comes up is that if you don't know what you love, if you don't know what you want to do, it's because you're not asking the right question. And for me, the right question is, what do I love? What excites me? Where do I feel like me? What lights me up? And most people will say, well, I've asked that. But I think what we are asking is, what do I love that makes money? What do I love that I have credentials for? What do I love that I'm not too old for? And that's a different question. So I would always say, if you're struggling with the thing of, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, then pay attention to right now in this moment. What are the things I love? What are the things I like? What lights me up? And I don't care if it's walking your dog, you know, or walking on the beach. I'm not talking about career. I'm talking about what you love.
Yeah. Well, getting clarity is really key, is having a deeper understanding of what you love. And also knowing that sometimes it might mean taking a few steps back to take a whole lot more steps forward. I think one of the chapter titles you have is Sometimes You Serve Onion Rings to Serve Your Journey. And that's a good thing.
Yes.
Because you were serving onion rings at the Paradise Cafe, correct?
Yes, yes, sir.
Yes.
You know, I took
Harvard lawyer.
Waiting tables. Yes. My mother loved that. You're serving nachos. You have a degree, you're serving nachos. That's what I heard every single week.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what she was telling her friends.
She wasn't telling her friends
that. She was too embarrassed.
Yes. That was the problem. She couldn't tell her friends anymore.
Yeah.
But exactly, it was that, is that I always say, you know what, if people are downsizing their lives, or they get a side job to support a calling, or they decide to make less money, or they do things that are challenging, I always tell people, it's never a step down to step ahead. It's never a step down to step ahead. Anything you do in the service of your calling, of your dream, is going to move you forward.
Yeah, and that's really important to remind ourselves of that.
Especially if you have big, fat egos like I do.
Well, yeah, and I suppose we all do to some
degree.
We all
do.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's another phrase that you use that I really wanted you to break down a little bit. It's called, only the tender can breed the fierce. What does that mean to you?
I actually wrote that for me to remind myself because, as we were talking about before, so much of this path for me came down to learning how to be loving to myself or kind to myself. And initially, when enough therapists tell you that and enough coaches tell you that, you know that that's the answer, but I didn't believe it. You know, I secretly believed, oh, if I'm going to be nice to myself, then I'm really going to be lazy.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm kind to myself, oh, look out, world, then I'm really going to be a slug. You know, and I had actually believed that being harsh with myself or critical with myself what was motivating my gifts. And What I learned is that only the tender can breed the fierce. The kinder I am to me, the more self-loving I am to me, the more fierce I can be in the world. Meaning, I can send out 1,000 manuscripts and get 1,000 rejections if that's what has to happen, mm-hmm. because I'm being kind to myself and I'm talking myself through it. And I'm not as afraid of the world if I'm not as afraid of me.
Mm.
You know, because I think that's what's always scaring us. It's not just what happens in the world and the rejection or the difficulties, it's that self-talk.
Yes.
You know, and so. For me, learning how to have a more generous self-talk has helped me be more resilient or sustainable in the world, how to take more chances, how to go out there and really be who I really am.
Mm. When I was in correspondence with Daniel Adinsky, he gave me permission to use a lot of his words, the Hafez poetry, in a project that I did.
I love them.
I do too. But he always would sign his emails, and I assume he does it to everybody, but he'd always sign it, "Be kind to yourself." And you know what? I started using that, and then I added something else. And sometimes I would get a lot of responses, and oftentimes from professional, like social workers and counselors. And it's like, well, thank you for the reminder.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially now, I think our culture has gotten into some really bitter messages and really harsh messages, and, you know, with reality TV and all of that. It's like, I think it's so important to speak of those softer things, but with dignity.
I do too. I do too. I'm delighted to have Tama Keeves on today's program. We're talking about her book, This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love. You're listening to Love is on the Air with Richard Brendon here on WICR. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to the program. My guest today is Tama Keeves, and we're talking about her book, This Time I Dance. Also, everything she's gleaned over the years in her workshops and the facilitations that she's done. And by the way, if people want to get a hold of you, Tama, the website is thistimeidance.com. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, thistimeidance.com. And we have all kinds of resources out there for people to check out. There's a free report you can download on this about if you want to find your calling right now. You can download it for free, and there's a blog, and I do an email newsletter once a month that supports people, and I'm on Facebook now just doing daily inspirations to keep our community mm-hmm. charged up and going, because I think we need each other. So it's thistimeidance.com.
Let me ask you, with all the work that you're doing, and as your celebrity continues to grow, how do you strike a balance in your own life?
Oh, did you have the illusion I have a balance?
You know, part of me is thinking yes, and the other part says if you're really authentic, you'll be honest and say no. It's out of whack completely.
Balance has never been my thing.
Okay.
I will say, I'm teasing also, because that's a really valid question. And I mean that. Actually, balance has never been my thing. But what I will say is coherence is. Mm. And the difference for me is I am always working towards listening to my own inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm always listening to my own inner voice, even if my schedule is nuts, mm-hmm. if I'm listening to my own inner voice, that is balance. You know, so to someone else, they might say, oh, my God, you know, how could you possibly, you know, be listening to yourself or whatever of. But again, we all have different ways of receiving that guidance.
Well, we really do. Our inner voices, we receive it differently. How do you receive yours? How do you know, oh, yeah, this is the voice I need to be listening to?
You know, two things for me. I've never been a great meditator, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm.
I've I journal a lot, and I journal, and I write to what I call the voice of love, or my inner teacher, the amazing one. I write to that voice from my fear, and I let it write back to me. And so I just journal back and forth. But I also, you know, because I love the work I do, I'm listening to my inner voice talking to you.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
It's like I get charged up, you know, talking to people, you know, talking to, in workshops and interviews, and the people who are in this realm. The more that you talk about what you love, do what you love, you are in connection with that voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the best ways I find to be in a space to hear that inner voice is just simply being out in nature.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's another phenomenal way. And I think, again, everybody has their own unique way. On a spiritual level, I've taught A Course in Miracles for 20 years, so that's definitely been a grounding for me as well. And that's, for me, just learning how to listen to the voice of love more than the voice of fear.
Yeah. In Chapter 8, you have the title, Catch on Fire, and the World Will Catch on to You. And it reminded me of a John Wesley quote, one of the founders of the Methodist Church, when he said about the revivals that he did, that I simply allow God to set my heart on fire and people come to watch it burn.
Oh, I love that.
I do too. And I'm just rejoicing in that quote. So,
but it
tied in nicely to what you're talking about as well. And so much of that is allowing our souls to be stoked to where we just put it out there. It's like a magnet, and then people and wonderful opportunities will be drawn to us.
Absolutely. And especially when you're doing this work professionally, when you're trying to make a living at it, you know, when you're trying to pay your bills this way, people get into all this stuff about, well, how do I market it, and how do I get out there, and how do I distinguish myself, and how do I blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, get into all the worldly stuff of the hows and the systems and the what you should do. And I really have found, for me, the more I set my heart on fire, the more I'm in that light, people know it. And if you're the real thing and you're really in that light, it will attract what it needs.
Absolutely.
And I'm not in my light when I'm trying to figure out how to sell you something, or how to market myself, or how to do anything with a search engine optimization.
It's
like, I'm definitely not in my light. You know, so that's, for me lately, to be honest with you, that's really the most courageous edge of this work, is how do I not only live my passion in the work I choose, but in the way I do it.
Can you share the story about Alice, who was a former nurse and photographer, and knew that one day she probably wouldn't be working for National Geographic, but she went out and just followed her bliss, and then one thing led after another?
That's exactly, I mean, that is how it works, where she, you know, most people are waiting for the world to assign you, you know, this thing. Like National Geographic is going to, if you want to be a photographer, National Geographic is just going to call you and say, go forth and do this. And Alice was just decided, you know what? I'm putting myself on assignment. I'm doing it. I'm going to go out to the desert and, you know, capture these photographs and put myself out there and learn this, because this is my love and this is what I want to do. And so she did, and she did these gorgeous photographs, and one of her friends hung one of her photographs in a bathroom. And then an editor of a magazine happened to see that photograph and said, who is this person? And then got in touch with her. And I think that's a lot of how this works, is everybody's waiting to be assigned or for the work to come to them. And it's like, put yourself on assignment. Just go do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Because that's how then we're often seen, by simply following those nudgings. Sometimes I say, go out and inhale a sunrise or a full moon. You use the expression, so gorge yourself on experience. I love that.
Exactly. And everybody's waiting for permission to do it, you know, for permission of, well, I'm not qualified, and what if this or what if that? But that's how you become qualified. You have more and more experience. That was my putting it in the river, you know. It's like me saying, I'm going to believe in this book. I'm going to believe in this work. I'll put my own money, my own design, my own love into it, because I believe in this. And then someone else came along and believed in it.
My guest today is Tema Keeves. Her book is This Time I Dance. We'll have one final segment right after this break. I'm Richard Brendan. You're listening to 88.7 FM WICR. Welcome back. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Tama Keeves, and we're talking about her book, This Time I Dance. And by the way, the website for information not only on this book, but on the work that Tama's doing around the country, perhaps even around the world, is thistimeidance.com. So Tama, talk about then love and how love sells, doesn't it? It really comes down to that. I think you wrote somewhere, I'm willing to believe that love advertises itself in bold and mysterious ways.
Absolutely. You know, somebody once said this to me, and I thought it was really great. They said something about, you know, you think about a guru sitting in a cave meditating, and they hit a truth or a light or a love, and they become world famous because of that light and that love. You know, not because they had a search optimization program or the best marketing program, but because they tap this love. And I know in my own work, I've gotten hired to do things. I've gotten invited to speak in places. I've gotten, you know, all kinds of things have come because I'm genuinely in that love. And when you're in your love, you're in your highest credential. You're in your talent. You're in your passion. People feel it. You don't have to convince somebody when it's coming out of your pores. But I think most of us think, you know, that we have to work on the business side and not the love. We think love is that, you know, oh, well, that's frivolous. But yeah. I think it's the greatest strength there is.
So whatever we have, whatever we're wanting to offer to the world, you write, don't pressure yourself to target a market. Hit the mark instead. Pay homage to your own connection.
Absolutely. You know, and I can tell you, you know, when I was writing This Time I Dance, for instance, you know, all kinds of people gave me advice, you know, of, oh, if you really want this to sell, if you really want to market this, you know, it needs to be way more self-help, not so poetic, you know, and not so literary. It really needs to be very self-help. And then other people would say, oh, God, this is too self-help. You need to make it a memoir. You need to write only the personal stuff. And I kept staying true to my connection of I was writing the book that not only did I want to write, but I was writing the book I wanted to read, you know, the book that I wanted on that shelf that I needed. And I thought, you know, I believe there's a reader out there for whom this is going to be helpful because I know it would be me. And if you stay in touch with your own connection, then you have the stamina to stay with it. You know, then you can stay. You know, like I said, I wrote that book for 12 years. Mm-hmm. If I was writing something that I really wasn't that connected to, there's a billion obstacles that came up that I would have given up.
Absolutely.
But when you're in touch with your real connection, you have this unworldly strength and infinite stamina. And so I think that's why you want to stay in touch with that. Plus, when the book did come out, people have loved it. They love the personal stories of it. They love that I wasn't giving step one, step two, step three. Mm-hmm. They love that it was real. You know, and so, again, I knew that I'd hit the mark. You know, I'd hit the mark for me, and it hit the mark for my audience.
Well, I highly recommend this book to anybody who is sensing that there's something more in their life that they want to experience, that they actually want to have a life of meaning and purpose and joy. A couple of final questions, Tama. One, this book is very inspirational, and I can tell just by your voice and your energy that when you speak, you're an incredibly inspirational teacher and speaker. Who or what inspires you in your journey?
Ah,
we're going a little deeper now.
For me, you know, I have to go back to A Course in Miracles. Has definitely been my main grounding of just really that material rocked my world, even though the language of it is challenging. But any spiritual truths just rocked my world. I'm trying to think of people. I loved Marianne Williamson when I first saw her speak. I love Julia Cameron. I love Rumi is my all-time favorite guru guy.
Yes.
But you know, to be honest with you, I have always been such a student and following other people that in these years it's been so important to listen to my own inner voice this time. Mm-hmm. It's been so important. What really inspires me is the voice that comes through me. And it's,
yes.
I'm not saying me,
yes.
but that universal presence blows me away that I have access to that, as do we all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I'm learning the same thing, probably in a deeper way than never before.
Mm-hmm.
So much of it is, I think, born out of love, is allowing our hearts to be tender and opening up and getting out of our heads and into our hearts.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering also, in your journey, with the people you meet, the work that you're doing. What are you learning these days about this healing power of love?
Oh, my God. It's amazing. I mean, the privilege of the work that I do is you may believe these principles for yourself in your journal, you know, and you sort of believe it and you sort of believe it. But when you get to teach and you get to coach people and you watch it transform the lives of complete strangers, it's like all of a sudden, wow, this really works. It's like, oh, my God, I'm right.
Yes, yes.
It's amazing. So for me, the power of love, I think what has blown me away more than anything else is the talent that I thought I had, the gifts I thought I had, with use and with time and with love, they have become so much more than I ever imagined. You know, like something's coming through now that I didn't even know was available, you know, and I see it in the people I work with as well. So I am just stunned by what the power of love can do. I'm hooked. This is a lifelong journey.
Yeah, yeah. Tama Keeves, the book is This Time I Dance, the website, thistimeidance.com. Tama, it's been a delight and a joy to have you share your time with us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the amazing work you're doing in this world and bringing these voices out to the public and your dedication to this path. Thank you.
I love this quote from Rollo May. He said, "If you do not listen to your own original ideas, if you do not listen to your own being, you will have betrayed yourself. Also, you will have betrayed our community in failing to make your contribution to the whole." In closing this interview with Tama, I wanted to read the last chapter of her book. It's not very long, but it's called An Invitation to the Dance. And this is for you, dear listener. Tama writes, "I invite you to this dance. We live in times that cry out for love and radical resourcefulness. We live in times that beg for new voices of bold grace. Safe choices have led us into unsafe times. An increase in diseases of exhaustion and toxicity, pollution, crime, and gutted spirits. We believed we needed good jobs, but those good jobs did not lead us to the goodness we desired. It's obvious now that work needs to support not just our material lifestyles, but our true lives and life itself. We need artists, artists in every profession, who can lead the world love first into the healing realms of devotion expressed. Take up your love, your desire to express world beauty or bone wisdom, to cherish potential or to devise and promote that better way. A universal intelligence has gifted you with a whispering wish not to question, mock, or dilute, but to give your life to and be given life in return. Trust these meek and gargantuan ideas. Tend even the preposterous seed. The idea begs you. I beg you. You do not know where love will lead. You do not know where love will lead. You do not know where love will lead. You see, throughout the world's history, it has taken desire, not safe, predictable, acceptable, and impenetrable thinking, to spark cures, breakthroughs, shifts in consciousness, revolutions, and renaissances. Discoveries dawned on the minds of the ardent and engaged, the jubilant and enraged, not merely the employed. The worship of convention has never led to astonishment and a joyous leap in human potential. Only enthusiasm plants wild gardens in the mind and harvests inspired fruits and flowers. Only enthusiasm, born of light, conceives of brighter worlds to walk in. What if we all followed our natural desire to share our love and creativity? Can you imagine the loving and the gifted teaching, writing, singing, selling groceries and carburetors, and leading nations in scientific and economic explorations? Can you imagine impassioned, grateful souls at corporate headquarters, in the courtroom and the newsroom, in the wheat field and the bean field, even in the operating room? If we each stood in our right places, with invincible hearts and visionary minds, would we not stand in a different world? Of course we would. And our feet
wouldn't even touch the ground. We live in a world of infinite possibility waiting to unfold. We all have so much to give, so much secret richness encoded in the passion of our dreams. Love transforms us into healers and leaders, lights and fountains and movers of mountains. When each of us pours our life energy into the art, service, or industry that enlarges our existence, we will at last avail ourselves of the most untapped and unsung resource on the planet, creative inspiration. So choose to use your gifts and live the adventure of this lifetime. Step into the larger scheme of following your dream. Let's deluge the world with the ultimate dancers, people who feed their souls with work and feed their work with soul, because soul will see us through. Inspiring words from Tama Keys from our book, This Time I Dance, Creating the Work You Love. We'll continue on with the program, but first is a word from our sponsors and a brand new Mary Grace Pinella message.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Annual or perennial? Is it me, or do you have trouble remembering which is which also? The line from Desert Errata, as perennial as the grass, usually brings me back. That is, if I'm thinking about flowers. What are the perennials in our world? Air, sunshine, breathing, the need for food, water, and love? The car needs to be checked annually. So do airplanes, by the way. After 1,000 hours of flying, the engines get overhauled. Some folks think that after so many years of living, we too need to be overhauled. A more helpful way of looking at our bodies is as a perennial thing. Daily, we decide what to eat. This affects function. Daily, we decide whether to exercise or sit on the sofa. This affects function, mood, and the elasticity of our muscles. Moment by moment, we choose our thoughts, and that affects our function, mood, and general disposition. So if we focus on the perennial nature of life, we might make different choices, like choosing to be proactive, having your teeth cleaned, having your eyes checked, having your nervous system checked by a chiropractor. Call for your appointment today, 317-863-0365.
In closing, here's an excerpt from an interview I did with the great Father Richard Rohr. In one of your books, you wrote, "Religion has tended to create people who think they have God in their pockets, people with quick, easy, glib answers." Would you address that further? Because oftentimes these days, it seems that we're hearing those quick, easy, glib answers.
Aren't we? You know, let me put it this way. They say if you want to tell a lie, tell a real big lie, and it works. And that we've been able in the West to take the biblical concept of faith, which clearly means not knowing, living without certitude, clarity, an ability to walk in darkness, an ability to walk at a deeper level of trust, and that we've been able to turn that around and make Christianity into a religion with answers for everything. It creates very inflated egos, and it's not serving religion very well at all. So I think we've turned around the basic foundational meaning of faith, which clearly meant not knowing. And now we got people who know everything, who know who's in and who's out, who's up and who's down, who's saved and who's not saved. It doesn't create the appropriate humility before mystery. And I think a sign of someone who has encountered authentic God experience is that they're always going to be humble. They're not going to be glib and smug.
Well, and that seems to be what's often lacking in activism. Even though I might support what they're doing, if you're not careful and you're not dealing with the ego, it will rise up eventually.
That's right. And that's why this is a problem as much on the left as it is on the right. And they both keep attacking the other side, thinking the devil's on the other side always. And neither side tends to see its own demons, its own, you know, absolute certitude about what is good and what is bad. So it isn't serving us well.
Richard, what do you see as a religious leader yourself? What do you see as the top issues that we need to be addressing in this country? For so long, what we call the religious right has kind of dominated the discussion and have centered around, quote, family values, around the abortion issue, around same-sex marriage. But there is so many more issues that need to come to the forefront that have everything to do with values.
It's amazing that we've been able to create, like the two you mentioned, the homosexual issue and the abortion issue, we've been able to create two litmus tests that have not been litmus tests for the first 1900 years of Christianity. It's like, where did these come from as the proof texts of whether you're really a Christian or not? And as a Catholic who tries to honor the whole tradition, I really want to say, where did that come from? You know, it's dealing with cultural issues and purity codes and needs to feel superior and right, much more than any reliance upon the teaching of Jesus, who never talks about either of those issues, for example. Whereas almost every other story of Jesus is talking about love of the poor and concern for the poor. And so it's really rather amazing that people who consider themselves followers of Jesus have been able to ignore many of the major things that Jesus talked about.
Talk more about what I would consider the radical nature of Jesus that we often don't hear about, but I think we are now more these days, but just how radical he truly was.
That's it. We churchified, if that's a word, we churchified Jesus, and we took him out of his historical Jewish reformist context, and we pretty much made him a white middle-class American, concerned about the same issues that we're obsessed with or preoccupied with. And once you do that, once you pull him out of his Jewish context as a reformer of his own religion and therefore a reformer of all religion, I think you pretty much have domesticated Jesus. And the things that we are concerned about are very different than the much more radical concerns of his, which have to do with justice, with mercy, with good faith, as one line from the Synoptics says.
Yes, and well, and also with the poor as well.
Yeah, right on. Well, when I say justice, that's what I'd mean. Yeah, concern for the poor.
Do you see any issues overriding any others that are taking place in the world today that you deem most important?
You know, this might surprise you, and I don't know if on longer reflection I'd say the same thing, but this is what comes to my mind right now. I think our biggest problem is superficiality. Is just an amazing preoccupation with silliness, with issues of no account, with you know, the lives of movie stars. And I think this superficiality is leading us to miss the heart of most issues, because we just don't go deep.
Mm-hmm.
We settle for cliches, for one-liners, for very quick explanations for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to kill us across the board, because in every issue, there's just no depth. So that's what strikes me. You know, that's what allows us not to see the evil of war, not to see the global warming issue as a moral issue, not to see the oppression of the poor as a moral issue. It's just that we're not bad people, I don't think. We're just not very deep people.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you, and I think a lot of what we see on the news, especially there's a gluttony of entertainment news, is basically numbing us to sleep.
Sometimes, I mean, it's the second or third thing on, as if the rest of the world doesn't matter. For example, we have a woman here on our staff who's a work intern for a year and was very aware of the recent typhoon in the Philippines, where she lost everything and lost much of her family, and whole cities were wiped off the map. Most of us are totally unaware that that has happened twice now in the last 10 days.
Hmm.
While we're preoccupied with Tom Cruise's wedding. I mean, it's rather sad.
And that's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.org. A reminder that all shows are podcast on that site. And in a few weeks, I'm going to have a brand new site, so I'm excited about that. So for engineer Aaron Duvall and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.